Hello, and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour with your host, Justine Ward. For the next couple of weeks, we're going to do true crime. The stories we'll bring you are dramatized versions of real events. In this week's show, the names have been changed to protect the innocent. That hint probably helped you guess that Dragnet is the series. You're right. Creator, director, and lead actor Jack Webb made it a point to be as realistic as possible about real police procedure, and the show moved to television very successfully. The radio version of Dragnet ran from 1949 to 1957, and this week we have a couple of shows from 1949, early in the run. This show is about a robbery in a bar that goes very wrong. This is Dragnet Homicide, first broadcast June 24th, 1949 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. A gang of quick-trigger gunmen have moved in on your city. They've given public notice that they'll kill the first cop who tries to take them. You know the risks, your job. Apprehend the suspects.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case, from beginning to end, from crime to punishment. Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, April 17th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My partner's Ben Romero. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the record bureau. It was 4 minutes to six when I got to room 42. Homicide. Say, Ben, I pulled a package on the Raymond killing.
And that proves you can still read, Friday.
He's at it, Joe. Your pal, Fred Lindsay.
Hiya, Fred. What's doing?
Busier than you are. We know what we're looking for. Just having a little trouble finding her.
That's the way it is with automobiles. They misplace so easy.
Not normally they don't. We've got a small-size epidemic on our hands.
Well, don't let us keep you, Fred.
Just ducked in here for a breath of calm air and to invite you to dinner for the last time.
The wife and I are still waiting for the first time.
How about it, Joe? Ruth's got a new pressure cooker.
Your sister-in-law visiting you again, huh?
No, on the level. Not selling a thing.
Come on. Who is it this time?
My cousin. But she's awfully pretty, Joe.
Well, why do you guys insist on trying to marry me off?
Me and Fred went down fighting, but it kind of grows on you after a while.
Now, tell me, what is it about a married man? Just can't stand to see one single man left in the world.
How about it, Joe? Tomorrow night at 7, okay?
Okay. Tell Ruth I'll be there.
It figures that he's got to run out of kinfolk pretty soon.
Fine. We'll be expecting you. Got a stakeout tonight, but tomorrow I'll be clear.
Anything big?
Nothing definite, Ben. Just a follow-up on those stolen cars. See you, men.
So long, Lindsay.
Joe, you'll like my cousin.
Oh, never say die. What a character.
Mm. You just catnipped women, Joe.
Yeah. Well, here's that Raymond package. Let's check those dates that Backstrand wanted, huh? Wednesday, April 17th was just routine. A dinner date I tried to get out of, some paperwork that the chief wanted done, and a hot, sticky day. Too hot to wear a suit of clothes. Sometimes it's like that. A day starts out being routine. By the time it comes of age, it's got a personality all its own. At 10:23 that night, Ben and I were just finishing up the paperwork, and Ed Backstrand opened his office door.
Friday, Romero, just got a hot shot call.
What you got, Skipper?
Hold up and shooting at Hooper and Esperanza, code 3.
Code 3, that means red light and siren. It was 10:32 when Ben and I pulled up at the corner of Hooper and Esperanza. It was a bar in the basement of a building on the south side of the street. A radio car was there, and the two officers were holding the crowd back. A man was talking to one of the officers, who turned and pointed to us. As Ben and I got out of our car, the man hurried over to us.
You're the detectives?
That's right, Sergeant Friday.
My name's Cummings, R.L. Cummings. I own the bar. This is terrible. There was a gunfight downstairs.
Uh-huh. Come on. Where's the ambulance?
One of the officers in the radio car said we needed the coroner.
Did you see the actual shooting?
No, I didn't. Here's the fellow that was shot.
Oh, where's Jones from the crime lab?
Hello, Friday. Romero.
Hi, Lee. What do we got here?
Pretty bad. Looks like a shotgun. Close range.
He really got in the way of it.
Ben.
Yeah?
It's Fred Lindsay. Motor theft.
He was on a stakeout, Lee.
Tell us about it, Mr. Cummins.
You know this fellow, Sergeant?
Yeah, we know him. What happened?
We had a holdup tonight. Three men.
Yes, go on.
Well, business was good, real good. We had a large crowd, and I was happy about that because I've been trying to sell out for a long time now. I've been showing the place to different parties all week long. Had a fellow coming over tonight to take a look at it.
What time was that?
Oh, a little less than an hour ago, about 9:30.
I see. Go ahead.
It was almost time for this man to show up, so I called Eddie. That's my bartender, and I told him to kind of keep a lookout for the man because I was going back to the office to get the books ready to show. You know how it is when you want to sell a business. You'll watch for him, Eddie?
You bet I will.
If you want me, I'll be back in the office.
Keep your mouth shut and stand still.
Huh?
You own this bar, don't you?
Well, yes. What is this?
You're the boy we want to see.
Which one of you?
All three of us.
What's going on?
What's it look like, genius? It's a stick-up.
I haven't any money.
You go to the bank on Thursdays, don't you?
Well, I made my deposit today instead.
I've been watching you for a month now. Don't give us that. You go to the bank on Thursdays. Now, come on, hand it over.
I'm telling you the truth. I usually go on Thursdays, but I went today instead.
You're lying, Ace, and we ain't got much time.
Look, you can have all the money I've got on me. I think it's about 200, but that's all I have. Here.
Why you argue with him? Take what he's got and we'll shake the customers down.
No, no, please don't do that. You got my money. Isn't that enough?
No, it ain't. Oh.
Come on, let's go out.
That's about all I remember, Sergeant. When I come around, I was lying on the floor of my office.
You better have somebody take a look at that cut on your face.
Yeah, I'm going to right away. There's my bartender. He saw the fight.
What's his name, Eddie?
Yeah.
Eddie?
Yes, sir?
These men are detectives, Eddie. Will you tell them what you saw?
Oh, it was pretty rough.
And tell us what happened when they started to shoot.
That fellow the coroner just took out of here sure was long on nerve. Took on all three of them single-handed.
Uh-huh. Tell us what you saw.
You ought to get that fellow's name. Sure had a lot of nerve. Took over just like he was a cop.
He was a cop. Now, what did you see?
I pegged him for a cop. Well, he was sitting up at the bar. Been nursing a bottle of beer for about an hour. I was keeping an eye on the front door, watching for this fellow the boss wanted to see. So I didn't see the three hold-up men come through from the back. But I heard them.
All right, let's knock it off. You can all see this shotgun. Anybody make a move and I'll blow your head off. Demas, cover the front door.
Got it.
Sickle, shake him down.
Okay, gents.
You guys in the van, keep that music going. The rest of you people turn around and face the bar. Put your hands on top of the bar and leave them there till we tell you to move. Come on, hurry up. Right. Knock it off. Okay, Sickle.
We'll take your money, your watches, anything else you got. Now, don't try to be cute and hold out. All right, you, take off the watch. I'll get your bill for it. You, lady, let's have the ring.
This come man on, they called Sickle went right down the line, took everything he could lay his hands on. This cop, your friend, was facing me at the far end of the bar. He was standing there just like the others. He kind of leaned toward me a little.
Can you see the guy with the shotgun?
Yeah.
Where is he?
Center of the room.
The other guy still at the door?
Yeah.
Got his gun out?
Yeah. Holding it in his right hand.
How far down the line is the other guy?
About 10 people away.
Hey, you two down at the end there. Knock it off. Hurry up, Sickle.
Doing the best I can. Come on, let's have the purse, lady. You, next to the lady here, get the watch off. I'll take the floor.
How far away now?
Yeah. Getting closer. But we better set up like he says.
I'm going to take the one with the shotgun first.
I'll blow you to pieces.
I got a gun. How far away is that guy now?
I thought Jans told you two to shut up.
All right, Sickle, try to move and I'll break your back.
Let me go.
Go ahead and shoot, Jans.
Get away from him, Sickle.
All you people at the bar, down on the floor. Okay, you with that shotgun. Grab it.
Bemis, can you get a shot at him?
Not without hitting Sickle.
Come on, you. I'm waiting.
You got us all wrong, boy. We like Sickle, but not that much.
The cop was holding Sickle as a shield. When the big guy let go with a shotgun, both the cop and Sickle ducked. The cop didn't get hit. This man, Sickle, fell over on his face, grabbed at his arm. The man with the shotgun went down on one knee, holding his stomach. The man at the door took a shot at the cop, but he missed. Then the cop fired 3 shots at the man by the door. Looked like the first 2 missed, but the last one caught the man in the leg and he went down. Well, by this time, the big guy with the shotgun had recovered enough to hold his weapon again. I tried to warn the cop,
The guy out, the guy with the shotgun.
I see him.
The cop pointed his gun and pulled the trigger, but he was out of shells. Boy, Sergeant, my stomach knotted up when I heard that hammer fall against those empty chambers. The cop threw his gun at the guy with the shotgun and then ran right at him. You know, it was just as if that cop was trying to run right down the barrel of that shotgun. I glanced at the cop on the floor, and then I tried to follow the three of them as they made their way out of the bar. They jumped into a car out front and drove off. As a kid, I used to watch Bill Hart take on a whole gang in the movies. This way, right in front of my eyes, Sergeant, he was an awful brave guy.
Did you get the license number of their car?
No, I didn't. I couldn't see very well.
You got a pretty good look at all three of the men, though, didn't you?
I believe I'd recognize any of them.
Thanks, Eddie. What's your last name?
Bowers. Eddie Bowers.
Got that, Ben?
Yeah.
You'll be hearing from us, Eddie. We may want you to look at some pictures for us.
Glad to help any way I can, Sergeant. I hope you get the men that shot this cop. You're sure going to try, aren't you?
Yeah, Eddie. We're sure going to try. The next step was for Ben and I to make a complete report to Chief Ed Backstrand.
They got Lindsay, huh? That Fred Lindsay an auto theft?
Yeah, that's right.
Good cut. You say he wounded two out of the three in that holdup?
Yeah.
That means they'll have to have medical attention in a hurry. We'll check all the small hospitals, cover all the drugstores to get a line on anyone who's bought medical supplies in the last hour.
Uh-huh. As soon as medical detail notifies Ms. Lindsay, I'd like to go over and see her.
Smith's from the medical detail's out there now. By the time you get back, we may have a flash in the drugstores or hospitals.
We'll be back in 30 minutes.
Call in when you get out there.
Right, Ed.
You might carry this with you.
Yeah.
I'm sick. I'm sick to my stomach about this thing. I want you to get those two-bit punks. I don't want them to see another sunrise. Got that, haven't you?
Yeah,
let's go, Ben.
Chandler?
Yes, sir?
Put out an APB. Have communications broadcast the descriptions of these suspects every 30 minutes until further notice. Is
that the hello, Joe. Come in.
Thanks, Ruth.
Sit down.
Ruth, you know how we all feel.
It's all right, Joe. You're married to a cop. I guess you're meant to expect things like this.
He'll like that.
Fred and I used to discuss the possibility of this. I used to worry about him. I used to worry a lot, Joe. All those nights when he was away and the days. I used to worry. Now I know he's safe.
Anything you want or you need?
Thanks, no, Joe.
Anything at all that I can do?
Yes, Joe. I think there's something you can do. You and Ben are assigned to this case, aren't you?
That's right.
Then be careful. Thinking that you and Ben will have to face those killers. Ben's wife. Be careful, Joe.
Yeah, Ruth, we will.
Oh, you're right. I want to see you get the men that did this to Fred. More than anything, I want that. No more heartaches.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, Joe.
How'd you take it, Joe?
Let's go.
Joe, how'd you take it?
You're married, Ben. You figure it. It was 11:30 when we got back to Central Division. As we walked into the squad room, Backstrand was waiting for us.
Friday, we just got our first lead. We've located a druggist who said he sold some medical supplies to a man about 45 minutes ago. There's the address. Pretty close to the scene of the shooting. Hop out and see him right away.
The Rex Pharmacy was exactly 14 blocks from the Red Feather Bar where the shooting took place. Rex Pharmacy was like your corner drugstore, complete with apothecary jars and shower curtains. The druggist was the same little man who's been prescribing sulfur and molasses since you were a kid in school.
I'm just about ready to close. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
We're from the police department.
I've been halfway expecting you fellows.
We got a report that you sold some medical supplies to a man about an hour ago.
Yes, sir, that's right. It's like I was telling those other officers that were here a while ago. There was something funny about that little fellow.
How you mean?
Well, for one thing, he came in here sweating quite a bit. Of course, it's a warm night, but he seemed terribly nervous.
Anybody with him?
No, he was all by himself.
What did he buy?
Well, it wasn't so much what he bought, but how much.
What do you mean?
You know how most people buy iodine, a little 10-cent bottle. He bought a couple of pints. Then there was all that gauze and adhesive tape. Bought enough to repair a small army. Cotton, box of swabs. Then he asked me something that made me wonder.
What was that?
Asked me if I had something to probe with. That's just the way he said it. Something to probe with. I asked him, oh, what do you want to probe for?
What'd he say?
Said a splinter. I told him a sewing needle would do the trick. He said forget it, and then he paid me and walked out.
Mm-hmm. Did you describe the man?
Mm-hmm. He's a small man, dark. Like I said, awful nervous.
You think you could identify him?
Oh, sure I could. If I ever saw him again.
Well, did he leave on foot, or was there a car outside?
Left in a cab, parked right out in front. Couldn't miss it.
Did you happen to take down the license number?
Well, no, I didn't. But I did jot down the taxicab number. Would that help?
Taking down cab numbers isn't exactly in a druggist's line, but because he had the presence of mind to do that one small thing, we accomplished in 10 minutes what could have well taken as many weeks. Maybe with this small wedge, we could do what Backstrand wanted us to do, get the killers before another sunrise. Well, it was close to midnight when we stepped into the drugstore phone booth. I called the cab company, got the night supervisor. I gave him the number of the cab, and he checked his location chart. Cab 375 was operating out of a stand at Wilshire and Greenhaven. It was the right driver, and he remembered the fare.
Sure, I know who you mean. A little guy, seemed in a big hurry. It was a long fare, though. I took him out to Englewood. Wait till I check my log sheet. I'll give you the exact address.
Here it is, Joe. 1523 Imperial. The room and half.
Yeah, come on. We'll check with the landlady.
Kind of late, Joe.
Yeah, let's stand away from the door, huh? Might not be the landlady who answers.
Yes, what do you want?
Police department.
Oh, well, just a minute. Let me see your badge.
There you are, ma'am. I'm Sergeant Friday. This is Romero. Homicide.
All right. Now, what do you want? I run a good, clean rooming house
here.
It's
not the house, lady. It's one of your tenants.
Which one?
That's what we want you to help us on.
Look, do you men know what time it is? Come back here in the morning.
Sorry, this can't wait till morning.
Well, I'm not going to invite you in. We'll talk right here on the porch and keep your voices down. My tenants work during the day.
Whatever you say, ma'am.
Now, what is it you want to know?
We're looking for a small, dark man.
Well, I got three here. Could fit that description.
No, he came in late tonight, about 45 minutes ago.
I wouldn't know about that. I don't spy on my people.
This is very important.
You'll have to keep your voices down.
Sorry. He's dark and he's small.
Oh, I didn't just say he was dark. You must mean Mr. Tyndall. What's he done?
What's his room number?
He's in room 10, but I can't allow you to tramp up and down the stairs. At this hour, you'll wake all my roomers.
We'll be as quiet as he wants us to be.
What do you mean by that? Is there going to be trouble?
I don't know, lady.
Where do we find number 10?
The end of the hall, last room on the right, and keep your voices down.
If you'll just wait in your room, lady, we'll call you for, won't you?
Okay, here we are. I keep the door clear, Ben. We might have trouble.
Think they're all in there?
We'll know in a minute.
Who is it? What do you want?
Police department. I'll try this loaded, Joe.
What do you want with me? What are you looking for?
Closet's empty.
What'd you say your name was?
Tyndall, Bob Tyndall.
New name, but same face, huh, Joe?
Yeah, how long you been out of jail, Tenney?
My name ain't Tenney, it's Tyndall.
Your name's not Tyndall, it's Sam Tenney.
We sent you up on a robbery charge 4 years ago, and isn't that right, Tenney?
No, it's not right. You got the wrong man. I never been in jail.
Yes, you have, because we sent you there.
Now, come on. Who'd you buy the medical supplies for?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look, Tenney, it's a hot night and it's late, so let's cut out the smart talk, huh?
Who'd you buy those medical supplies for?
Tenney, look, you're a two-time loser right now. Who are you shielding?
You got nothing on me. I ain't done a thing.
We can prove that you bought those supplies tonight, and it can go kind of hard on you. So let's open up.
I haven't been out of this room all night long.
We got a druggist and a cab driver who'll make a liar out of you.
I still don't know a thing.
That cab driver hauled you home here 45 minutes ago. Where were you?
I was out on a date.
Is that who you bought the medicine for? Ben, call the druggist and get that cab driver. We'll take Tenney downtown.
All right, all right. All I did was buy the bandages and stuff. I got nothing else to do with this.
Who'd you buy the stuff for?
Now you know everything else. You'll figure it out.
Oh, now look, punk. We know there were three of them. One of them killed a cop. We're going to get to them, and Tenney, you're not going to stand in our way.
He killed somebody. He didn't tell me that.
Who didn't tell you?
I don't want any part of murder. I'm going to tell you who it was, but I'm clean. I got nothing to do with it. I was trying to help him out of a jam.
Who were you trying to help?
It was Roy Bemis, Charlie Sickle, and Red Jans. They didn't tell me nothing about murder.
Well, why'd you help?
They offered me a pretty good piece of change to run an errand for me. You know, I got paid for. That's all I had to do with it.
Where did you deliver those medical supplies?
I have to tell you that. I'm afraid of Jans. He's awful free with that shotgun.
We'll give you protection. Now, where are they?
Can I go to jail till you get them?
You'll get protection. Give us the address.
It's an apartment house. It's around the corner from here. The Blue Eagle.
We took Sam Tenney down to Central Division with us. On the way downtown, he told us that Red Jance and the other two had their room at the Blue Eagle barricaded. Tenney said that they told him that they'd kill the first cop who tried to take them. But we knew they were wounded. He told us that Sickle had an arm wound, Bemis got it in the leg, and Jance had a slug in his side. We figured they'd be weak from the loss of blood, and we could take them easy.
You'll never take those guys easy. Sure, they lost a little blood, but they had enough fight left to stack that room. And they got enough left to kill you if you try to take them.
On the way to headquarters, we stopped at an all-night drive-in and called Ed Backstrand. We told him we had a radio car watching the Blue Eagle. We gave him the whole story and told him we were on our way in. By the time we checked into Homicide, Ed had the plan all mapped out. It was 2:25 a.m.
Here's the map from the city engineers. It's one city block bounded on the north by Hawthorne Street, on the south Lawndale Avenue, on the east 16th Street, and to the west 17th.
The Blue Eagle apartment house is right here, on 16th and Hawthorne.
West of the Blue Eagle is a private residence. South of the Blue Eagle on 16th is a vacant lot. There are 12 apartments in the building. The men we want are on the second floor, number 11. And that apartment faces east on 16th.
How do you want to handle it, Ed?
Now, Baker and Morheim will evacuate the private residence. Friday, you and Romero clean out the apartment building.
Right, Skim.
All traffic is being diverted. The entire block is completely isolated. We'll throw up a cordon. Since we clear the residence, nobody goes in, nobody goes out.
Will you brief us again when we get there, Ed?
I'll give you all the briefing you need right now. Get this. These guys have already killed a cop. I don't want to lose any more. You know they're heavily armed and they're desperate. Have the men draw shotguns, tear gas, and Tommy guns.
I'll take care of that, Skipper.
All right. Now, we're not going in after these punks like tin horn heroes. We're going after them, and we're coming out alive. All of us. What time is it, Brady?
2:37.
Not much time till sun up, is it?
It was a code 2. That means red light and move fast. Backstrand figured we needed 6 squad cars, 4 men to a car, the police public address truck, ambulance, and floodlights. Ben checked out the weapons to the men, and by 2:46, we pulled out of the Central Division garage. We slid into the area at 3:20 a.m. The 6 squad cars and the public address truck took up their positions. The floodlights were rigged and ready to turn on at Backstrand's command. The machinery was set to roll as soon as we got the neighborhood cleared. Ben and I evacuated the Blue Eagle apartment house.
How many does that make, Joe?
Well, we've cleared 9. 2 to go. Here's apartment 10.
The killers are right next door. Joe, I'd like to kick that door in right now.
Take your time, Ben. We'll get to him. Quiet now.
Hey, what is it?
Police department. May we come in?
Yeah, of course. What's the trouble?
No trouble. We're evacuating the building. Now, we'll have to ask you to leave by the back door. We'll notify you when to return. Please leave quietly and lock your door.
What's going on?
No time to explain. Thank you very much for your cooperation. Okay, now, we'll skip 11 and go to 12.
Yeah.
Well, who are you?
Police department. Can we come in? Sorry to disturb at this hour. We're evacuating the building. Please hurry and leave quietly by the back door. You'll be notified when to return. Lock your door when you leave, thank you.
It was 4:10 a.m. Everything was set now. The neighborhood was completely cleared. The entire block was empty except for apartment 11 on the second floor of the Blue Eagle. I left Ben to watch the door of apartment 11. I went downstairs and across the street to join the rest of the men. It was Ed Backstrand's show from here on. That's it, Ed. All set.
Baker, Morheim, all clear?
All clear, Chief.
Baker, you and Morheim take 3 men and cover the rear of the building.
Right.
Is that detail covered Hawthorne Street?
They're all set, Ed.
How about the vacant lot?
Taken care of.
The rest of you men?
Yeah.
Friday and I are going into the building. We'll try to get them to come out now. Johnson.
Yes, sir?
Come with us and keep us covered. Let's go.
Apartment 11's up at the head of the stairs, Ed.
Right. Any action, Romero?
Not a thing, Skipper.
Keep down, all of you. I'll try to get him out. Jance, Demas, Sickle, you're all alone. The building's clear. Come on out with your hands behind your head. Come on out, gents, or we'll come in and get you. You hear me?
I hear you, Ed.
Come on, let's get out to the street. Johnson, cover that door and be careful. Keep down.
Right, Chief.
Friday, Romero, come with me.
We left Sergeant Johnson to watch the door, and we ran out into 16th Street and ducked down behind the police sound truck. The floodlights hit the side of the building. Backstrand grabbed the microphone.
Jantz, Bemis, Sigel. You've got 30 seconds to come down out of that room. Walk out backwards with your hands behind your head. Stay together. Don't fan out. 30 seconds, Jantz.
They're making it tough, Ed.
Romero, lob some tear gas through that window.
Right, Skipper.
Come on out, Bemis. We're giving you a chance. That's more than you gave that cop in the bar. Come on out.
That's Jantz, Ed. He isn't coming out.
They must have got Johnson because he's in another room.
Shoot the gas in there.
That's not going to get him out, Ed.
Give it time, Freddy.
Floodlights in up there. Friday, rake that second floor with the Tommy gun. Let's keep them in one room.
Right.
Hold your fire, Fanny.
George, give us a couple of masks. Ben and I are going in.
The rest of you men, concentrate your fire on those two rooms. Hit them down.
Here's your mask, Joe. Let's go.
Put that mask on, Ben, and keep down.
Yeah, wait a minute. Somebody coming down the inside stairs.
Duck, Benny's got a gun.
I got one, copper. Get out of my way.
Stop it, you. You haven't got a chance.
I'm coming through, copper.
Think I stopped him, Joe.
Can you see Johnson?
No, it's too much gas in there.
All right, you two up there. We got one of you. The other two, come on out.
Joe, think we got him?
I don't know. Can you see Johnson?
No, Joe, it's still too thick in there.
I'm going in, Ben. Cover me. Come on. We know there are two of you up there.
Just one, copper.
Throw your gun down the stairs ahead of you. Hurry up. Shotgun, Joe. Jantz.
I see him. I'll take him at the foot of the stairs.
All right, I got my hands up.
I found Johnson, Ben. All right, Jantz, outside. Come on, move. Put the handcuffs on him, Ben. I'll cover you.
How's Johnson?
I don't know. Ed, get the ambulance crew over here.
Jantz, who's this other guy we got?
Bemis.
How about Sickle?
I said just one, didn't I, copper?
Never mind the smart talk, Jantz. Now just answer the question, huh?
Sickle wanted out of it a long time ago, so I let him out. He's upstairs. I let him out the back way.
Then you shot him?
He wanted out, didn't he?
All right. We'll take him in. Johnson's in the ambulance. I'll see you in the office.
Yeah. Right, Skipper.
How about a smoke, huh?
Yeah. Here you go. Backstrand said he didn't want those men to see another sunrise.
Yeah.
5 minutes to five, Joe. Sun ought to be up.
Yeah. But look, Ben. It's cloudy. Guess we'll never know, huh?
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Edgar Red Jantz, the sole survivor, was tried and convicted and sentenced to be put to death in the state penitentiary in the manner prescribed by law. You have just heard the fourth in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the office of C.B. Horrell, Chief of Police, Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to radio car patrolman Forrest E. Sawyer of the Denver, Colorado Police Department, who on the evening of March 8, 1937, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web.
I'm your host, Justine Ward, and next, we have another episode of Dragnet. In an effort to be accurate about police department procedure, you will notice they have a page-turning sound effect before the description of the suspect, because it would have been found on the second page of the police report. Many policemen were fans of the show, and Jack Webb cultivated a cordial relationship with law enforcement. Enjoy Dragnet. Myra the Redhead, first broadcast September 1st, 1949, on NBC.
Here is another in NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to auto theft detail. In 3 months, more than 250 cars have been broken into. Property amounting well into thousands of dollars has been stolen. Two youthful members of the gang have been apprehended. The all-important brains of the criminal ring, the leaders, are still at large. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, March 2nd. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the night shift out of auto theft. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the interrogation room, and it was 10:58 p.m. when I got to room 26, chief of detectives' office.
Real tough kids, aren't they?
Yeah, they won't admit a thing.
Now, sit down.
Thanks.
When'd you pick him up?
About 8:30 tonight in the parking lot behind the Star Theater out on Sunset. He was lifting the radio out of a 48 convertible. He's had lots of experience. The
report says you picked up a 19-year-old girl with him.
She was waiting for the guy in a parked car across the street from the theater. The car was full of loot.
The first real break we've had in those auto burglaries in 3 months, and it's no good to us.
Neither one of them will talk. They won't even admit they know each other.
You run makes on them?
Just did. We've been questioning the boy for an hour, getting nowhere.
What's his name again?
Freeman. Stanley Freeman.
Oh, yeah. Age 20. Address? Butte, Montana. Down here for a vacation.
He doesn't lie very well, Ed. He's never been to Butte, Montana in his life. Knows less about the town than I do.
Well, get to him.
Right, Ed.
Where'd you put the girl?
We had a policewoman take her to our office. We can talk to her when we finish with the boy.
Well, what's her story?
Hasn't any. She won't even open her mouth.
19 years old, probably needs a good spanking. Now get him to talk.
Right.
Did you run a make, Joe?
Yeah, he's clean.
Get wise, huh, Flatfoot?
Look, you're in a bad spot, son. That kind of talk isn't going to help.
Says you.
We caught you red-handed trying to steal a radio that didn't belong to you from a car it didn't belong to you. Is that right?
That's enough to send you to San Quentin, boy. You better give us the story.
Shut up.
We've got all the evidence we need for him.
Maybe you don't realize how serious this is. We've had more than 250 car burglaries in this city in the past 3 months. Over $200,000 worth of property has been stolen. That's a lot of money.
So what?
So you're the number one suspect, young fellow. Your method of operation in breaking into that car tonight is the same used in most of the other burglaries. That means you're not going to be tried just for this job tonight.
What are you getting at, Flatfoot?
Listen, son. In the state of California, breaking into a locked car is a felony. You can go to state penitentiary for that. And we're going to file a complaint of burglary with the district attorney in the morning.
You say you're from Butte, Montana. All right, I don't believe you. But we'll make sure. Ben, go down to our office and call the news photographers. Stanley here is going to have his picture on the front page of every newspaper in Los Angeles tomorrow.
Right, Joe.
No. You can't. I won't let you. I got my rights.
What's the matter, youngster? Everybody wants his picture in the paper.
Yeah, well, I don't. I won't let him.
We got your picture already, Freeman, remember? I took it when they fingerprinted you.
You can't use it. You can't. I'll get a lawyer.
Reporters will be over in a couple of minutes. We have to give them your story and your picture, too. This one.
You won't. You won't. Give it to me.
All right, all right.
Give it to me.
All right, Freeman, get your hands off him. Now sit down.
All right. Now let's have it straight.
Don't let him use the picture. Don't let him. You can't. You can't.
We got to have the truth, son. Now, look, you're 20 years old. You know right from wrong. You'll have to take your medicine. If you cooperate, we'll do all we can to help.
Oh, I live out in the Wilshire district. All I wanted was a little extra money. We didn't take much. We didn't think it was so wrong.
It was stealing, Freeman. You know that's wrong. Where do you live out there?
Piper Avenue. 821 Piper. You won't give him my picture.
You live there with your family?
Yeah, my mother. Father's dead. Promise me you won't give him the picture. My mother, she'd see it. Promise me.
You're working with a gang on those auto burglaries. We know that. Now, who are they, where are they, and what's the setup?
I can't. They get me for it.
Who'd get you?
I can't tell you. I can't.
Who's your girlfriend, Stanley, the one you're with tonight?
Joanne. Joanne Miller.
Where does she live?
Piper Avenue, same as me. Lives on the same block, 866.
Is that her home? You live there with her folks?
Yeah. Mother and father. They work.
And you got her into this. Isn't that the story she gave us, Ben?
I did not. I didn't. It was her. She said a bunch of kids were doing it. It was quick money, something to do at night. She started it.
All right, Romero. I'll go see the girl. You stay here with Freeman.
All right, Joe. Just stay put in that chair for him.
Hi, Marge.
Hello, Joe. You and Romero handling this case?
Yeah. I'd like to talk to the girl a few minutes, Marge. Will you stand by?
Right, I'll sit over here.
Thanks. All right, miss, what's your name, age, and address?
I told this lady cop 15 minutes ago I'm not saying anything.
All right, then we'll tell you. Your name's Joanne Miller. You live at 866 Piper Avenue. You live with your father and mother. Both of them work.
You're a liar. That's not me.
You're 19 years old. You live on the same block as your boyfriend, Stanley Freeman, and you're the one who got him mixed up in this gang. Isn't that right?
No, it's not right. It's not. I didn't do anything.
Well, that's only half the story. Freeman told us everything. You want to hear the rest?
No. Stan wouldn't tell you. He wouldn't.
He told us how you got him mixed up in it. Quick money. That's what you told him, didn't you?
No, it was him. I can prove it. The rest of the kids will tell you. He got me in this. Ask them, they'll tell you. It was Stanley and Fred Milford and George Jansen. They started it, all three of them.
All right. Will you tell the story to a police stenographer?
I'll tell him everything. He's not blaming this on me.
Marge, will you go get the stenographer?
Right.
Now, how many persons in this gang of yours?
Oh, about 10 or 12. And it's not my gang, either. He got me into this, and now he's trying to lie his way out, blaming me.
How long you been doing this, burglarizing cars?
Me? Only about 2 weeks. It was supposed to be fun, something to do at night. The rest of them have been at it a couple of months.
Who's the head of the gang?
I told you, it's him, Stanley, and Fred Milford and Jansen, all three. I only started going out with him 2 weeks ago, maybe less.
All right, Joanne. Tell it to the stenographer the same way.
Stenographer will be in a minute, Joe.
Okay, Marge, thanks. Stay with her.
Right, Joe.
Just about a closed case, Ben. Girl gave us a full confession.
She didn't. Oh, you're not tricking me again. She didn't.
She told us you're one of the leaders of the gang, Stanley. Said you got her into all this. The other two are George Jansen and Fred Milford. About a dozen kids in the gang, all of them about your age. Isn't that right?
She's lying, can't you tell? She's lying. She got me into the gang. Well, she did. She's Milford's girlfriend. Ask her. Oh, she can't lie out of that one. She got me into it. I can prove it.
Who's the real leader of the gang?
Milford. He started it. He organized the whole thing. He collects the stuff we get and he delivers it. Jansen helps him do it.
What do you mean he delivers the stuff? Where does he deliver it?
Well, somewhere in Dogtown, I think. Down around South Main, near the railroad yards.
Who's it delivered to?
Well, I don't know exactly. I heard Jansen mention the name once. Myra, he said. It's supposed to be a big secret. Myra, that's all I remember.
Where does Jansen and Milford live?
Well, Jansen rooms down on East Flower. 1042, I think. It's a rooming house. And Milford lives two blocks over from me on Quincy. 234 Quincy. He lives with his grandmother.
Got that, Ben?
Right.
All right, let's pick up Milford and Jansen. It was 10 minutes past one when Ben and I returned to headquarters with George Jansen and Fred Milford in our custody. In Jansen's room at 1042 East Flower Street, we found two fur coats, a box full of new car accessories, an S&W 38 revolver, and a .45 automatic. When we picked up Fred Milford at his home, we discovered five deluxe car radios hidden in the garage, plus a valuable assortment of cameras, cigarette lighters, and clothing. Both Jansen and Milford refused to talk, but when we got them to headquarters and showed them the signed statements of Stanley Freeman and the girl, Joanne Miller, they broke.
Milford, where else did you and your gang operate besides the Wilshire District?
No place, only out there, that's all.
Same type of car burglars have been committed all over the city. You telling us your gang didn't have a hand in them?
It's the truth. Our territory was Wilshire District. We didn't go outside.
You mean some other gang's responsible?
I don't know. All I know is we didn't have any part of them.
Is there another gang, Milford?
Maybe. I don't know. You find out. It's none of my business.
It is your business, Milford. You admit you and your gang committed 55 jobs in the past 3.5 months. That leaves about 200 jobs to be accounted for.
That's right. You figure it out.
We have figured it out. I think you and your gang of young thieves pulled every one of those 250 jobs. There isn't any other gang. That's the story the district attorney's going to get.
You're crazy. There is. I know there is.
Then give us the information and save yourself a lot of trouble.
Well, we're not the only ones. That's all I know.
Milford, do you know how many years you get for auto burglary?
I told you, we're not the only ones. There must be a couple of others besides us. Vince Mahoney, he's got a gang.
Where does Mahoney operate?
West Hollywood and Beverly.
Where does he live?
I don't know. Honest, I only met him a couple of times.
Where'd you meet him?
I don't remember.
Where'd you meet him, Milford?
Delivery. I met him down at the delivery place a couple of nights.
When you delivered the property you stole from Cars, is that right?
Yeah.
Where was that?
Down by the railroad yard.
Where?
Chavez Street. It's a little alley off East Main.
Who'd you deliver the stuff to?
I told you, her name's Myra. That's all I know. We meet her and some guy on Tuesday nights. We give them the stuff and they pay us off. Mahoney delivers the same night I do.
Do you meet her every Tuesday night?
Yeah.
You're going to meet her this Tuesday, tomorrow night?
I don't know. I guess so.
Same place?
Yeah.
Are you the only one she deals with?
Sometimes Joanne. Me or Joanne. I know what you're thinking. You want to use me to trap Myra. Well, what's it worth?
You know better than that.
How about it, Milford?
Oh, what else can I do? Give me another cigarette.
By 3:30 that morning, the signed statements and confessions were piling up fast. Milford gave us a list of the names and addresses of each member in his gang, and within an hour, they were all under questioning at headquarters. Most of the suspects, about one-third of them girls, ranged in age from 18 to 21. As they told their individual stories, the scope of the case grew until it covered most of the city. By late afternoon of the next day, Tuesday, March 3rd, three more gangs operating in Venice, Bel Air, and North Hollywood have been apprehended. They confessed to more than 175 burglaries from locked cars during the past 3.5 months. At 5 o'clock that afternoon, Ben and I met with Chief Backstrand in his office.
How many admissions you have now?
Over 50, Ed. Here are the gang leader's statements.
What's their story?
Well, it's pretty much the same. They all say this woman, Myra, set up the operation.
You mean she got the kids and put them to work burglarizing cars?
Well, not exactly. She picked the leaders, contacted them in bars or on the street, asked them if they wanted to pick up some spare money getting auto parts for it.
Then she didn't tell them to go out and burglarize cars?
Well, not in so many words, Ed, no. After they brought in auto parts for a couple of weeks, she told them to bring her everything they could find, outside the car or inside. Those are the words she used.
Five of the kids dictated those words into their signed confession.
Oh, that should hold in court. What else did you get on this woman?
Oh, she taught them how to work, told them to wear gloves, all angles.
Well, we got most of the small fry. Now, where do we find this Myra woman? Any description on her?
Yeah. Kids say she's about 33, 34. Good-looking redhead.
5'5", about 120, well dressed.
No description on the guy she runs with.
You run a make on her yet?
Yeah, no previous record. We set up a stakeout for her tonight. Two of the gang leaders have volunteered to go along, this Milford and Vince Mahoney.
Good. Down on Chavez, where she usually meets them?
Yeah, that's right.
When?
11:15. That's the regular time for the meet, according to the kid.
All right, I'll be at home. Call me. I don't want to miss out on this one.
When Ben and I left Ed Backstrand's office, we went home for dinner and a few hours' sleep. At 9:30 p.m., we were back at the office. We met the men in the special detail, which Backstrand had assigned for the stakeout that night. We briefed them on their duties, and then we got Fred Milford and Vince Mahoney out of their cells. To avoid any possible suspicion of the presence of a trap, we had Milford's permission to use his car in the stakeout. The car which he had said he had driven to the delivery meetings with the woman, Myra, at least a dozen times before. We arrived at the stakeout area, Chavez Alley in East Main, at 9:58. The meeting was scheduled for 11:15. The moon was out, but the sky was overcast, and there was a cold wind blowing from the east.
Hey, what time you got, Sergeant?
About 10. Why, Milford? Getting nervous?
No, just wondering. How are you cops going to rig this thing?
In just a couple of minutes, we're going to plant you two in Milford's car parked up there in the alley. Now, you stay there until Myra shows up. We'll do the rest.
Yeah, I know, but what'll we say? Suppose she asks for some stuff. We ain't got any.
You won't need any. You won't have much time for talking.
Hey, suppose she wises up. Maybe she'll pull a gun.
Maybe. Does she carry one?
No, never saw her with one.
Don't worry, Milford. We'll make sure you're not in danger.
She's got an awful temper, that redhead. Got mad at me once when I squawked at the prices she was paying us for radios.
What was she paying you, Mahoney?
Oh, an 8-tube radio, good shape, $7.
She got all the gravy and you got all the grief.
You're not kidding.
Joe, are you?
Yeah, Steve, what do you got?
Well, the men are all staked out, Joe. Got the area covered from every angle.
All right. You got an extra man to stay in Milford's car?
I'll handle that myself.
Fine, thanks.
Okay.
All set, Joe?
Yeah. Now, Milford and Mahoney, we're going to put you two in your car now. There's going to be an officer with you, so there's no need to be nervous or afraid. You just sit in the car and act natural. When this Myra drives up, don't leave the car. Have her come to you. You got it?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, Joe, let's go.
Sure is cold out. I don't even have a heater in my car.
You stole enough of them.
Okay, Steve, here they are.
All right, boys. Milford, get in first behind the wheel.
Okay.
Mahoney in the middle. Now sit in the back.
We'll be parked in that garage across the street, Steve. Got a perfect view of the alley.
Okay, Ben. Check with you later.
All right. Mean night, Joe.
Yeah, come on. It's cold here in the garage, isn't it?
Yeah. That might be a long wait. What time you got?
6 minutes past 10.
Thank you. Hey, Joe.
What is it?
It's nothing. Thought that passing car was turning in the alley.
Relax. It's early.
Lonely place. Dark. Gets on your nerves.
That's it, Ben. 11:30. Nothing yet.
Somebody might have tipped her off.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Now, let's wait it out anyway.
Joe, that blue coupe.
Yeah, he just turned in the alley. Let's go. Come on, run, Ben.
Behind you.
All right, I'll wake him. Oh, a quicker fight.
What'd you get, Steve?
Here he is. Just drove up in the coupe. Got out and called Milford Mahoney by the first names. He's in on it.
What about the girl?
No sign. Kid was the only one in the car.
All right. Tell them in the stakeout's off for tonight. Have him report back in. We'll take the kid with us.
Okay.
All right, young fellow. This way.
What do you cops think you're doing? I ain't done nothing.
Look, sport. We heard that from 54 different kids yesterday. We're tired of that line. Come on.
When we got back to the office, we took the boy to the interrogation room and questioned him. He gave his name as Matthew Leiter, age 21. He wouldn't break until Vince Mahoney definitely identified him as a member of his car burglary gang and a special favorite of the red-headed woman they called Myra. Then Leiter copped out and told Ben and I that he had talked with Myra as late as 10 o'clock tonight. He told us that she had heard that the police had picked up some of the gang members, and she asked Leiter to drive down to the Chavez Alley meeting place. He was supposed to tell Milford and Mahoney that the weekly delivery date was off until further notice. We questioned Matthew Leiter for an hour and a half.
You told us a little while ago that you talked with this woman, Myra, late tonight.
Yeah.
Where'd you talk to her? Her home?
Her home? Don't be stupid. Nobody knows where she lives. I met her at a bar.
Which bar?
Julia's, out in Santa Monica.
How did she contact you?
Called me at home. She's not such a bad dame. She treats you right.
Sure, that's why you're in jail. Did you ever call her on the phone?
I don't know her number. None of the kids do. She's smart. She taught me all I know about the racket. You'll have a rough time getting her.
Maybe, but we'll get her. Ben and I left the office at 2 a.m. and went home to bed. We reported in at 8 that morning to Ed Backstrand. The three of us went down the street to Kokin's restaurant for a cup of coffee. Nobody was in a good mood. We had most or all the small fry in the citywide burglary ring, but it seemed we were still a long way from cracking the inner circle.
Leiter kid said that none of them knows where she lives, what her phone number is, nothing. Pass the sugar, Ed.
I think we still have a few angles to study on that score. Right now, I've got some more bad news for you.
What's that?
You been through your mail this morning?
No, not yet. We haven't had a chance.
I saw the overnight reports. There were 32 car burglaries last night. 32. All the way from Wilmington to North Hollywood. Now, you figure it.
I can't. This girl Myra must have an army of kids working for her.
How much did they get, Ed? Any idea?
Rough estimate, about $3,000. Usual stuff people are foolish enough to leave in their cars. Watches, cameras, furs, expensive clothes.
M.O.'s the same?
Like the others. If the car happens to have a rigid handle lock, they slip a piece of pipe over the handle for a lever and break it. If that doesn't work, they pry open the wing window. Some of the windows were smashed out.
Sounds like you're in an awful hurry, Joe.
Yeah, maybe this Myra wants a few big nights before she peddles the stuff and gets out.
If we're going to get her, we can't waste time.
Any suspects picked up last night, Skipper?
None.
Well, where did they hit most of the car?
Outside the Pan Pacific, the parking lot. Hockey game going on. Must have been 4,000 cars for them to pick over. They picked the best.
As usual.
Well, you better get on it. There's one way to handle it.
What's that?
She works fast. You work a little faster.
We got back to the office and we went over the reports one by one. Then we called the young gang members to the interrogation room and questioned them separately and re-questioned them. We got nowhere. Many of them had met Myra on the street, in the bar, but not one of them had any idea where she lived. At least that's what they told us. Ben had a hunch that Matthew Leiter knew more than he was telling. We had him brought to the interrogation room, and all that afternoon until 10 o'clock that night, with interruptions for his meal periods, we talked with Leiter. He would admit nothing more than what he'd already told us.
Yeah, it's got me beat, Joe.
Yeah. Now let's check with Ed.
Good morning, Joe.
Ben? Hi, Mike. Skipper in?
Just went down the hall for a minute. Be right back. Hold up a minute, will you?
Yeah.
Chief of detectives always handing. Yeah. Well, you, Joe.
Oh, thanks. Oh? Yeah. He does? We'll be right over. I was Sergeant Hopkins over at the jail.
Yeah?
Matthew Leiter's got something to tell us. Says it's important.
Have a chair here, Leiter.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, you wanted to see us.
I'm getting even with that dame Myra. I'm squaring with you.
Yeah?
She told me if I was picked up, she'd have me out in a couple of hours. She promised me a lawyer if anything happened. Said she'd get me bail.
All right, where can we find her?
I don't know if she's there now, but you can find out at Francisco Motors. Big used car lot. Garage, too. It's out on Melrose past La Cienega.
What's the tie-up?
That's where she fenced most of the stuff we stole. Some old guy she buddies with runs the place. Big shop in the back. Store a lot of hot stuff there.
Barney.
Yes, Sergeant?
We're through with him. Take him back. We checked with Chief Backstrand, and then we drove out to the Francisco Motor Company. We located it on the corner of Melrose and Geneva Avenue. It was a big layout. It consisted of a large used car lot sign bannering the slogan, Deluxe Auto Accessories. Lowest prices in town. Along the back end of the lot, there was a large L-shaped garage. We found the man in charge, and he gave his name as Paul Hackett, the owner of the car lot. In the garage, we found the entrance to a large back storeroom, was loaded with thousands of dollars worth of auto radios, spotlights, cratefuls of assorted car accessories. Special closets built into the walls of the garage contain racks of fur coats, suits, dresses. Below that, smaller boxes containing watches and cameras, all wrapped in tissue paper.
You can save all of us a lot of time and trouble by talking to us now, Mr. Hackett. Where is Myra?
I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
Can you explain what we just found in your garage?
I didn't know it was there. I didn't know it was stolen.
Well, which is it, Mr. Hackett? Make up your mind.
I bought it, but I didn't know it was stolen. You can't prove I did know.
I think we can prove it, Mr. Hackett. Some of those stolen car radios stored back there, the serial numbers are filed off, and this workbench here is full of filings.
I didn't know.
You'll have to do better than that. How does Myra figure in?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all right with us, Hackett. We found the stuff and we got you. If we don't find Myra, you'll be doing time for two people. Stand still.
You can't. You can't do this to me. I don't know anything about it.
Come on, Hackett. We're taking you in. All right, get in the car. Come on, in the car.
Am I going to jail?
You're going to jail.
All right. I'll take you to Myra.
Hackett told us that Myra lived at 1345 Munich Drive in Beverly Hills. He said that he was Myra's husband. He told us that he'd been in a legitimate garage business for 10 years before he married Myra. She talked him into the racket. He identified 1345 Munich Drive as their home. When we got there, we found stores of stolen property similar to those found in the garage. Myra was not there. Hackett had no idea where she might be. We sat down in the living room and waited. One hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. After 5 hours of waiting, the monotony started to wear on everybody's nerves, especially Hackett's.
Man, the whole thing, it was her idea. I should have known, all hers. She did this to me. I won't take it alone. Where is she?
You tell us, Hackett.
Told you, I don't know. She couldn't have gone. She didn't know. I'm not going to take this alone.
All right, quiet down, quiet down.
That you, Pa? Thought I heard you talking to some Susie.
The police, Myra. The police. Your smart kids told them the whole story.
What are you talking about, my smart kids? What are these cops doing
right,
in the
living room? That's enough.
Get your dirty hands off me. Get away.
These kids are right, Joe. She got a temper.
Will you take your...
There, that ought to hold you for a while. All right, come on, you two. Let's go.
All right, copper. You win. Stupid husband. How many times did I tell you? Don't trust those kids. Don't store the stuff in the garage. Don't open it for anybody. Get a lawyer.
No, you knew better. Dumb jerk. The idea of having those cops camping in the living room waiting for me. Why didn't you warn me? I'm going to divorce you. That's what I'm going to do. I'll stick you for plenty. Jerk.
All right, inside you two.
You got a smoke, Ben?
Hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thanks. I was just thinking.
What?
Those kids were right. She's a pretty nice-looking woman.
Yeah. Nice face. Beautiful figure.
Mm-hmm. Sure talks a lot, though, doesn't she?
Yeah. Hey, Joe, remind me to take home some flowers to my wife tonight, will you?
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Paul and Myra Hackett were tried and convicted on 7 separate counts of receiving stolen property. They are now serving out their sentences in the state penitentiary. Realizing that most of the young persons involved in the case were influenced by the strong personality of Paul and Myra Hackett, a separate investigation was made into the backgrounds and home life of the young offenders. In most cases, they were found to be basically good, and they were placed on probation and returned to their homes. You have just heard the 13th in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the office of W.A. Wharton, Acting Chief of Police, Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Detective Harry William Vosper of the Seattle, Washington Police Department, who on the night of July 21st, 1949, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. And now, an important announcement. Starting this Saturday, September 3rd, Dragnet will be heard at a new time over your NBC station. Consult your local newspaper for the new listening time. And now, speaking in behalf of the producers and the entire cast of Dragnet, we would like to take this opportunity to thank you for your many kind letters of encouragement and approval. Remember, next Saturday for Dragnet, this is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on the Old Time Radio Hour. We appreciate your tuning in for the best from the golden age of radio. And I hope you can listen again next week when we bring you more true crime. Make sure you don't miss a beat by subscribing through iTunes, Podbean, or RSS. Until next week, I'm your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.